Hello, good evening, and you're very welcome along to our Life and Times programme here in Midlands 103. It's Albert, and joining me today, I'm delighted to be joined by a man who comes all the way from America. The original journey arguably would have started back in Bourke many years ago when his mum used to live there, Mary Quigley. Bryce Collins, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
Your mum was from Burr.
Yes.
And as a result, you have now ended up living in Offaly.
I ended up living in Offaly, yes, and it was quite a journey, as a matter of fact.
Well, we're going to find out about it over the next hour. Tell us about your mum, Mary.
Okay, well, my mom, she was a second chef in Burr Castle.
Wow.
To Lord and Lady Ross. Mm-hmm. She worked at Dooley's Hotel for some time as well, and she was brought up by her granny because her parents passed away from
tuberculosis.
During the time, and at one point she just met up with her husband here, who was on holiday, Leo.
Where's Leo from?
His mother is a Dubliner, but he's he's actually from America as well.
Right.
So you know.
What did he do?
He was an air traffic controller.
Okay. Wow. That's a cool job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Based where?
He was based in Boston for a while, mm-hmm. and then he was based down in Miami, Florida.
So she gave up being a chef in Burr Castle and went off to America mm-hmm. with Leo.
Yeah. Not with Leo. I mean, he went back home
She followed
shortly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And where they set up home in
Boston. Yeah, for a while. And actually in a small town outside of Boston called Lynn.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you came along.
I came along. Yeah.
Is there many in your family or is it just you?
I'm the only child.
You're the only child?
Yeah.
All to yourself?
All by myself, yeah.
So you were brought up then in Lynn in Massachusetts?
Well, no, I was mostly brought up in South Florida.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, they moved pretty much immediately. He was transferred down to work and I was brought down to South Florida there. So.
South Florida. Florida sounds very kind of exotic. Beautiful palm trees, warm weather, subtropical.
I'll tell you what. You never want to talk about bad where you've been reared, but to be honest with you, I mean, people are shocked, actually, when I tell them that I prefer the weather here more than I do in Florida. because you got to think about it this way. It was like clockwork. I mean, it was religiously at 3 o'clock every day. It would just rain down in buckets and torrents.
Wow.
Okay. And it would happen for about an hour and a half. And when you have 37 degrees Celsius weather, the tarmac, it starts to evaporate up,
yes.
And then you got the humidity, and
yes.
I mean, it was year round, so it's, it looks pretty on TV, but it's rough living, especially, because you don't get to see the change in seasons.
Oh, but you've got so much going for you over there. You've got the weather, you've got the cost of living is so much cheaper than the cost of living over here. You must be in good moods every day when you get up.
No comment. Here, actually, I'm in a great mood.
Okay. You know? Well, I know that you're now living here permanently, mm-hmm. but you'd have grown up then in Florida, and that's where you'd have...
I grew up in South Florida until high school time, and then I joined the United States Navy. I was in the United States Navy for 7 years. I'm connected to an elite unit.
What kind of elite unit?
Well, it was, it was a combat elite unit, and I'll just leave it at that, and we'll just be a little bit. But, I mean, they were connected to the USS Theodore Roosevelt and a air squadron.
Are we going SEALs here? Or?
No comment. But essentially, I was in the first Gulf War, and I was over in the Persian Gulf for a year and 9 months.
How did you feel about that, Bryce? I mean, the first Gulf War was, in effect, the first television war.
Yeah.
And, you had, like... shock and awe and all of these phrases, and every night you had Schwarzkopf giving how many things they blew up today, and it was surreal. It was like watching the world's biggest computer game.
Well, I'll be honest with you. From my perspective, they had the, it's not like the second Gulf War where the actual TV cameras were right up on the troops. They were pretty far off in the first televised war there. And I saw a crew once. But what was to my shock and awe is when I came back from the Persian Gulf, you know, and I talked about it because I actually got ill from the Persian Gulf. I took friendly fire and so forth. I have half titanium knee here.
Wow.
And yeah, a Marine on my side shot me. They call it friendly fire. Mm-hmm. Didn't feel too friendly though. So, but what shocked me was everybody was like, it was a 3-day war. It was no big deal. And I was like, what are you talking about? You know, because I was there like much longer than that. And, you know, it was a lot longer than 3 days for sure.
Well, sure, you had the whole situation with Saddam Hussein, mm-hmm. and then he grabbed the oil fields in Kuwait, and, you know, the rest is kind of history. And it was felt outside of the States.
Exactly.
That this was an energy war. It had nothing to do with right or wrong or anything else. And,
you
know, you being one of the frontline people, just general comments, you know, mm-hmm. not to give any state secrets. How would, the Marines and these soldiers feel about going over fighting for oil as opposed to fighting for freedom?
Well, you know, I mean, to be honest with you, we follow orders without passion or prejudice.
Yes.
You know, we represent the government of the United States when we're soldiers. And, you know, we don't question orders. You know, the court orders come down.
Is that really the case, though?
It is really the case. I mean, believe it or not, I mean, if you are a, you know, what they call a 4-0 sailor, you know, which is like, you know, top of the grade sailor, you know, you don't question orders unless you're obviously questionable or illegal orders. I mean, the Navy of today, okay, you have kids coming in enlisted, they come in from high school and so forth. I mean, they have an adjustment period, and it seems that today that the military had lowered their entry standards at one point and just let anybody in. So, you know, it was a shock to me because they had the saying back then, the kinder, gentler Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I mean, you would see these kids questioning authority, talking back to officers, something that I would never think of doing as an enlisted person.
Well, I know that the American Armed Forces,
mm-hmm.
and here in Europe, we have reason to be grateful for them. I mean, we could be all speaking German without them.
Exactly.
If that's the case. But it's got such military might. It's the biggest kid on the block at the moment. And it's got awesome weaponry. And, you know, it just seems like, are the Americans very warlike because of it?
You know, I mean, it's funny because even in our national anthem, we're mentioning rockets and bombs. Okay, I mean, really. And, I mean, it's... from the outside perspective, I've seen that, you know, because I went to college in Chile and, you know, I was able to get a lot of outside perspectives of what, you know, other countries thought about America and that they thought they were very warlike and cowboys and so forth and so on. And in a general aspect, to be honest, the people of the United States are not warlike.
We have a huge affinity with them being here in Ireland.
Exactly. And the people, you know, the actual soldiers who serve themselves, they're readily trained and they're ready to go at any moment's cost and so forth. But everything is done with just prudence. I mean, now going back into history, you know, when we were just bombing and shooting and bombing and shooting today. I mean, there's so many checks and balances, and everything is done with such a surgical precision.
But I mean, okay, and we'll get away from this now.
Okay.
But do you not see, finally, do you not see, as a soldier, when you see the likes of, you know, Dick Cheney,
mm-hmm.
You know, and Burtonport and all these companies making billions from the rebuilding, the so-called rebuilding of Iraq and...
Well,
all these places. You don't have to find it. Hey, that's on my back, buddy.
Yeah, no, I don't. I call it war profiteering, and I don't in any way, shape, or form condone to any form of war profiteering. I mean, yes, we have both sides of the spectrum. We have the Democrats and the Republicans, the left wingers and the right wingers, and I'm more of a left winger, believe it or not, which is very unusual for a military personnel to be on the left. But, you know, I'm an Obama fan and I was a Clinton favorite and stuff.
You're a
like
Democrat.
That, big time. But
take us back, though. What age were you when you joined?
I went into this thing called the Delayed Entry Program. Now, it's kind of similar to just before you're leaving cert. Okay, the last year before you're leaving cert, that summer break, they send you out to what they call boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I went to boot camp, and then I came back and did my final year of high school serving in quote unquote the reserves.
Yes.
And shortly after that, after high school, I went right back into the training programs and so forth.
And were you looking at the Army at that stage? Sorry, the Armed Forces at that stage as a career?
No. I mean, the only reason, honestly, that I had ended up joining the armed services is because at that time I really had nowhere to go. I mean, financially speaking. We were talking about my father being an air traffic controller. Anybody who knows what an air traffic controller is, you know, the personification of that individual is a very, very strict and rigorous kind of individual. So I was kind of like out in me wee ass, as they say.
Did you have a difficult childhood?
My mom was great. Let's just put it that way. My mom supported everything.
Were you a good kid, or did you get into trouble?
No, I was never a troublemaker. I regret that now because I look back on that and I say, I really didn't have any fun, But my drug of choice was my music and my studies, and that was my thing.
And when did the music? Like, we're going to talk about music a little later on, but when did the music start for you?
Oh, when I was 5 years old.
Were you playing?
I was playing. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. It was immediate. I mean, I met this. From Boston, Arthur Fiedler, famous conductor of the Boston Pops at the time. He's long since passed. And, my mom had known him through a third party, I believe. And anyways, he was over the house, and we had a piano that was collecting dust. He just started pounding on the keys, and I was just like, I want to be like that. I just said, I want to do that. And from that moment on, I dedicated my life totally to music, against what my father had wanted, envisioned for me, but my mom was extremely supportive.
We're going to move over to the 7 years because you won't talk about it. And what happened next? Where did you go after that?
After the military.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, after the military, I mean, I found myself kind of floating around a little bit for 6 months. I was jumping job to job. And I decided,
Just before you got, you said you were wounded in friendly fire, and your knee had to be rebuilt.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about that, or how did that happen?
Well,
friendly fire.
Well, there was another veteran that was shot in the stomach. It was a pretty, it was an entry exit wound, so it was a pretty easy wound to heal. And basically, the Marine that shot me saw that I was a silhouette, and he just
shoot first, ask questions later.
Basically, yeah. And I mean, they were falling short. They were hitting the sand, and I'm dancing and I'm waving, going friendly, and they still nailed me. Anyways, honestly, the pain, it didn't feel like anything. It felt like how somebody kicks you from the back of the knee.
Yeah.
It just felt like the knee was taken out from under me. I didn't feel the pain until I looked down.
So, would you have been invalided out of the Army then, or?
I was invalided out of the Navy because of other reasons, medical reasons, chemical warfare, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Things that could have never really been explained, of how they came about. But anyways, I was given a medical discharge and sent on my way home.
So you spend kind of 6 months trying to find something and...
Trying to find myself. I mean...
Six months doesn't seem like a long time.
Well, I'm not one of these people that like to waste time, I mean, I felt myself, I felt no inertia. I felt no energy. I had a heightened frustration for the transition out of military life into civilian life, which is one thing I can thankfully say now that military has implemented transition programs for that. But in my time, I didn't really have a good transition. And then I decided to start a video production company.
Is this at the end of the six-month period?
At the end of the six-month period.
How did you go about making that happen?
Well, I basically picked up a camera and I started beating the streets, asking people, do they want commercials, documentaries, and so forth and so on.
Where did you pick up the skills?
I'm self-taught.
Mm-hmm.
I was self-taught. I mean, I had the music behind me, okay? And music and editing are just like a timeline and the same thing. I knew what I liked to see on TV. I know what the public liked. And I figured, I was constantly in acting and the arts and so forth and so on. So I was like, okay, this should be pretty easy.
And was it?
It was. I mean, it was a challenge. It'll be honest with you. It was a big challenge, especially hitting the... editing programs at first. Coming out of the Navy, because at that time the Navy wasn't as advanced as we are, and I come into civilian life, I'm like, the internet, AOL, what is all this stuff, you know? And, my first program working with the video editing programs there like I said, it was intimidating, but you know, I pushed through. I mean, I have this mantra: adapt, overcome, and improvise. And and I basically did that, and it was something that I've lived with. And you know, we just started small and just started getting
bigger.
Well, I
want to come back to that in a moment, but I have to take a commercial break. It's Life and Times here, Midlands 103. In this evening's program, we're on conversation with Bryce Collins. We'll be right back in just 2 minutes' time. Very welcome back. It's Life and Times, and it's Bryce Collins. Bryce, before the break, we were talking about you'd established this film and editing production company. How did that go for you? How did you develop it?
Well, basically, I started looking into other video production companies and see how they got started. And I figured at this point, you know, we could do the farmers, what we call the farmers market approach, and that's, you know, buy an orange, sell it for profit, come back, buy two, and sell it. And I went ahead and started like that. And as I built on sort of my equipment, I would completely invest everything that I had made back into my equipment to improve on that. And
you made a living out of it?
I made a living out of it for 12 years. So we did it for 12 years long. And then the recession hit, or Bush Jr. hit, whichever you want to say. And, you know, I mean, I was elated when Barack Obama was elected. And
has Barack Obama been a disappointment, or has he been a success?
Well, you know, I've been here more now in Ireland during Barack Obama's tenure than I had been in the States. I left pretty much immediately. You know, it kind of looks bad. But
why did you hang up your spurs? Why did you?
Well, you know, it was the thing is, you know how he was always about change and change and change. Well, I was the same way, you know, and I saw that we were going nowhere in Florida. And I was just like, you know, this is ridiculous. Everybody's undercutting the market. There's no market for what we're doing here. And, I looked at my family one day and I said, we're moving to Ireland.
Were you married at this stage?
I was with my partner, Christina.
Okay. You know. And how long are you with Christina?
Christina and I have been together now for 15 years.
Any kids?
Yes, we have an 11-year-old and a 6-month-old.
Fun and games, can imagine. So, how did Christina react when you said, look, you know, we should hang this up?
Well, I can't say it on the radio, but basically what they say on the internet is WTF, you know? And my mom was like, you're kidding me. I don't believe you, you know, and this and that. And what I had done was overnight, it was an overnight decision, really, is I had developed a new television program. I'm also an executive chef. I developed this new television program. This is kind of where I put the horse before the carriage, to be honest with
right.
you. And I went ahead and, you know, got some American investors involved and came over here to Ireland.
Why Ireland?
Why Ireland? Because, one, it's where my roots are from. It's where my mom's from. And much to my shock, as I was just looking, I saw a market here in Ireland in food where I believe that Ireland is the gastronomic superpower of the world and that it wasn't being portrayed as such.
What kind of preparation did you put in, Bryce, into moving to Ireland? I mean, you had this television. Was it commissioned? Was it?
No. See, that's where I was telling you I was putting the horse before the carriage. Okay. You see, in the States, the way it works is you shoot a TV program, you present it before the TV stations. They even say, I love it, let's make a deal or get the heck out of here.
Punch.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and take a hike. So I didn't know anything about commissioning agents or stuff like that. And the moment we landed in Ireland, we hit the ground running. We started filming right away. I mean, the day was.
But
day
hang on,
one.
You back up here a little bit.
Okay.
You've made the decision to move to Ireland.
Yeah.
There's the whole logistical side.
Oh, yeah, there was a logistical side.
Why did you decide to live where you lived?
Well, we decided.
Where do you live?
We decided to live in Cork originally.
Okay, from Cork, so I can appreciate that.
We did that because of the food, obviously.
What part of Cork?
I was living in Douglas.
Okay, yeah.
So I was living in Douglas and Cork. And the reason, the logistical side of it, we had a house, okay, that was in my family for 40 years. The neighborhood was just deteriorating anyways. So we did something, what's called a short sale, which is like we owed so much to the bank and we said, hey, you know, bank, look, we'll give it back the house and call it quits and even.
And a lot of guys over here want to do the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, we tried the renting thing for a while. You know, we had tenants, but they kept defaulting and so forth. And it's hard to do it from being a landlord from way over here.
Yeah.
So I just did the quick sale thing. We had what you guys call the car boot sale. We had a garage sale.
Sold everything.
Sold pretty much everything. I would say 9/10 of our personal possessions we sold. And put everything, 2 duffels per family member. There was only 3 family, or 4 family members at the time. Now there's 5. And, you know, we had a 4x4x6 pallet that we had sent over here, and we came over to Cork. Like I said, we started.
How long ago was that, Brass?
That was in May.
Okay.
That was in May of 2010. And, you know,
how long did you stay in Cork?
I stayed in Cork for a full year and a month almost.
And then why the decision to Offaly?
Why the decision to Offaly? Well, one, my mom still has family in Birr. Okay.
Family are important.
I'm close to Dublin as well.
Yes.
The drive from Cork to Dublin was killing me, even though, you know, the M8's a great road and everything like that. It was murder on petrol in the car and so forth, and all the traffic tickets I was getting, no pun intended. But anyways, I thought Tullamore was an amazing town. My mom's birth wasn't registered when we were doing our immigration status, and Tullamore was a town that I had to go through because she was born at the Tullamore Hospital.
Yes.
And I was like, wow, if I knew about this town, I would have moved here. You know, I mean, I'm like, and the people are just. It's a different style of people. It's very laid back and very cool, and everybody's so nice and friendly, and you know.
So how long are you in Tullamore now?
I'm in Tullamore now 6 months.
So you and the family happy enough here at the moment?
We love it. We're living over in Hop Hill over there, and we're doing.
How's the television series program?
Well, basically what had happened with the television series is I finished filming. I actually did two series. So I did see what we would call in America season one and season two. And I submitted them. And then it was like, do you have a commissioning agent? I was like, oh, Eva. You know, and I had to go back and go through all the rigmarole and stuff like that. So right now I'm in negotiations with a affiliate that I can't mention, so because I'm under contract and so forth to keep it silent. But so we put that aside, and I went ahead and left that to the side, let the higher ups decide what they're going to do with it. And I incorporated Bryce Collins Limited.
What does Bryce Collins Limited do?
Well, Bryce Collins Limited, we have actually eight different departments, and we're, you know, so we do various things. One is Initiative Ireland.
Okay, now what's Initiative Ireland?
Initiative Ireland is a way to. I had noticed that everybody seems to be stuck in a rut, and you know, with the economic times and so forth, and the jobs and whatnot, they're having so many problems. And it wreaks havoc actually on your personality and your state of mind and being depressed and so forth. And what Initiative Ireland does is I go out and I speak to the people, you know, in motivational seminars on how to say, okay, you know what? I'm good at this and this and this, and do what I did. Take what you love and turn it into your profession.
Okay.
You know, and
so you're a motivational speaker.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So instead of looking for a job, create jobs.
What's the second thing?
The second thing is called 11th Hour Reel, which will be our production company, or is our production company. And, you know, it's basically the same as we did in the States. We shoot commercials, documentaries. It's the production company that also shot the series on there and so forth. Mm-hmm. We have Star Dream Weddings, which is a full service.
Third part.
That's the third part.
Okay.
Which is a full service wedding company. Okay. We do everything from filming the weddings to the food aspects and so forth and so on. I have Bryce Collins or Chef Bryce Foods, which is soon to come out, and I'm doing a line of my own food products.
What kind of food products?
Well, we're going to do from sweet to savory. We have sauces and chutneys and so forth and so on. On the sweet side, we have this amazing lemon cake, cinnamon rolls, and shortbread cookies that are coming out, and that's just the start.
Okay, that must be about four items. Go on.
Yeah, no. I mean, there's just so much going on there. And then on the flip side of things, going back into the music is something that I'm working on. It's probably my biggest project of all.
What way?
Well, in the fact of the accreditations that I need to do and the web platforms that I'm going to have to go through. But I'm going to be starting what's called the EU Academy of Music, okay, which is going to be not only an online music academy, but it's also going to be a physical music academy as well.
And what will the music academy do?
Okay, we're going to hit every genre of music, every instrument, you know, from musical theater to opera to rock to whatever genre the musician wants. I mean, like, for example, when I was trained, I was trained operatically when I went to music school. And, I mean, there was a very limited resources there. Obviously, the internet wasn't existing in my time. But essentially, what I want to do is it's a loose curriculum for the online students and a strict and hopefully accredited curriculum for students that
attend. So if I'm a guitar player, how will it benefit me?
How would it benefit you? Okay, well, if you are a top guitar player, for example, if you're a good guitar player, it would benefit you because you'll be able to go online as a professor, okay, if you wanted to go that way as a teacher because you're good, and you'd be able to teach students. They click on your profile, and then you'd make money that way. Now, flip side, if you want to be a guitar student, okay, you go on and you browse through a series of guitar teachers, and you find the one that better fits your genre, and, you know, oh, I like this guy's write-up and whatever, and they click on you, and they go right ahead and right into that.
Okay. So, what else?
And then we got Collins Cookery Academy. That's going to be coming out, which is kind of like on the same line. So I'm put together with two other chefs that I'm doing. We're doing a live cookery academy where I do cookery demos on the road and at a fixed site, which we're to be announced right now, and as well as an online cookery academy, which is...
Quite a lot there.
Yeah, we got a lot going. We got
quite a lot. And you're in Tullamore 6 months.
I'm in Tullamore six months.
A lot done in 6 months.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing was is like when I it was like getting hit with a brick wall when I got stopped with the TV series, you know, kind of having to wait. And
but you have a lot of money invested in it.
I put 207,000 quid into that.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Myself. And, you know, with that, you know, I was kind of like at a standstill. And, you know, I didn't
But why take on so many things at once? Well, not just take one or
two? Well, you know, a lot of people ask that. But if you see and if you go to BryceCollins.com, it's even on the homepage. Everything we do works hand in hand. It's either, you know, it's feeding the community through food, music, an initiative. You know?
Okay. Well, speaking of music, we need to take another short commercial.
Okay, no problem.
When we come back, I want you to tell us about the Tullamore Concert Choir.
Absolutely.
And all what's involved in that. It's Midlands 103's It's Life and Times. We're in conversation this evening with a very fascinating and busy man, Bryce Collins. We'll be right back again in just a couple of moments' time. And you're very welcome back. We have a very, very busy man over here. I'm dizzy trying to keep up with the amount of plates this man is managing to keep in the air. And on top of that, not only does he have these 8 plates flying, he's just bringing in a bigger one again. And that is in the shape of the Tullamore Concert Choir. Please, Bryce, tell us about that.
Okay, well, you know, my training was always as, you know, a conductor, composer. When I'm around conductors, I tell them I'm a composer. When I'm around composers, I tell them I'm a conductor. Regardless of the fact, I've been to several karaoke competitions around town here and had seen such amazing potential and talent and such amazing voices. And this is one thing that I was just blown away by was the amount of talent that rests in the Midlands, you know. And yes, there are plenty of choirs out there.
Well, they have a very famous Tullamore
Gospel Choir, and you have the Chamber Choir that started, I think, a couple of years ago, was it? And, you know, I mean, those groups are absolutely amazing.
So why another one?
Why another one? Because I wanted to hit it. I want to hit a genre in a way that I can not only have a choir started, but also teach while having fun, okay? I have a methodology when I've taken choirs. I've taken the most impossible choirs before that are tone deaf and what have you not, and turned them into excellent show choirs and so forth. And we are recruiting members from ages 7 all the way up to 107. It doesn't matter. Sopranos, altos, tenors, basses. We're going to be doing a Christmas concert over at St. Catherine's in Tullamore. Okay, and it's a non-denominational. It's just we're using that location as a venue. And basically what we're doing there for that is we're going to have the choir vote on a charity of where this the monies are going to go to.
So the choir doesn't exist at this moment in time?
The choir is being built at this moment in time. By the time this will air, we'll be in our fourth rehearsal.
And when did you decide to do this?
I decided to do this about 2 months ago.
Okay. How did you go about making it happen, and what kind of support have you been getting?
The feedback has been wonderful, and I've been in mostly by word of mouth and through my recruiting through my website, as well as, you know, talking about it with other singers and so forth and instrumentalists. I've gone to different schools, the University of Ireland, Maynooth, you know, and so forth. And there's an academy here in town as well, a music academy. And basically, I've just been just putting the words out in the streets through flyers and so forth. And the response has been amazing.
The Tullamore Concert Choir will cover what type of music?
It'll cover music of all genres, from musical theater. Okay, to your like Bach and Mozart and so forth, into more contemporary choir styles. So it's a mixed choir, it's a mixed ensemble, and you know, it might be 60 members, but you know, certain acts will 10 members will sing, other acts the entire group will sing, and I hope by next year, by next Christmas, to have it where we perform Handel's Messiah.
And what about, do you need musicians as well?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Along with this concert choir, I want to put together a concert orchestra as well, you know, so that they go hand in hand together and they perform. I mean, this first concert, obviously, is going to be for charity, but this is a choir and a orchestra that I would like to make it professional.
Wow.
As well.
It's very
and like I said, you know, I teach very basic music theory and bring in people with good voices and make them understand why they have the good voice and how to sight read the music as a singer. And they don't even know they're learning. And by the end, you know,
okay.
They turn.
Okay, well, here we are at the end of October now. You've been running for the last few weeks. How long does a rehearsal take?
About an hour and a half. Yeah, yeah.
Where are you rehearsing?
I'm rehearsing over at St. Catharines now. They just opened up a new parish center, and because we're going to be rehearsing in St. Catharines mostly, but as it gets colder, they're going to move it over to the parish center because heating the church just takes
and
a long
at this
time.
Moment in time, you're still looking for additional members.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We'll take on members all the way up to the end. I mean, as long as they learn the music, that's just fine.
And you're hoping then to have a concert at Christmas, is
around
it?
Around Christmas. We're looking at the 15th, 16th, and 17th. Again,
it's not that far away.
No, it's not. Not at all. I don't know.
Are you pretty confident you're going to get this?
I really am. I have not only faith in the people and the abilities, but you know, the music is easy enough. Of course, I mean, there are some difficult pieces. Granted, I mean, it is four part harmony, but I believe in the initiative of the choir members to take their own time to learn their parts outside of rehearsals.
Okay, well, just I suppose finally on this aspect of it, if somebody wants to become involved in the Tullamore Concert Choir. How do they apply? What number? Do you have a number or website?
Absolutely. They can go on to www.bryce, that's B-R-Y-C-E, collins.com, or they can email music@brycecollins.com or call me, or ring me rather, at 085-215-2945.
And you'll take it from there.
And I'll take it from there.
Interestingly enough, you've most of the planes are flying the other direction out of Ireland at the moment because of the economic situation.
Yeah.
You've come in here from what is a fairly wealthy country into a fairly poor country at the moment. Mm-hmm. What's your view at the moment on where Ireland is?
I think we have amazing potential. I mean, that's one of the things that I say in my speeches with Initiative Ireland is the fact that, look, I came in here viewing Ireland as the gastronomic superpower. Okay. I want to get the stigma of the sick old man, you know, away from Ireland. And basically, I'm trying to encourage people to stop emigration, you know, because if we have all these good people, you know, oh, I got this job in America. Oh, I found this job in America. You know, what's Ireland going to be like in 10 years? I mean, certainly having kids, I was shocked because in America, you don't have child allowance and you don't have all these things. Ireland does so much for their people. And I think it's up to the people to give back to the country as well.
Okay. You know? Have you recorded any piece of music?
Yes, I have.
Do you have any with you?
Yes, I do.
That's excellent. Well, I'm going to tell you what. We're going to play out with Willy Wonka?
Yeah, well, basically, at the end of the TV series that I've been producing, we do a musical parody on every different episode. Like, for instance, instead of Sting's An Englishman in New York, it's a Yank chef.
Englishman in New York.
Exactly. It's a Yank chef who lives in Cork. So, you know, and one of the things...
And is there a Willy Wonka chocolate theme here or something?
Well, what was it in a chocolate theme? But when I entered into the Cork's English market... It was like for a chef.
Beautiful,
it was like entering into a Nirvana. World of that's imagination. Yep. And it was the first music that I started hearing. So being the goofball that I am, I went ahead and went home and rewrote the lyrics and called it Gastronomication. We got a few kids together for my son's school. We got my production company together. I was able to get a costume that was designed by the family that did the original costume. You can actually see me singing this online. And we went ahead and produced Gastronomication at the English
And that's
Market.
What we're going to hear now. Bryce, thank you so much for
thank
coming
you.
In and spending the past hour in our company. We're going to play out with Gastronomication. And just before we go, do any contact details you want to give us again? It's your website, I suppose. The main
again, one. Yes, it's www.bryce.collins.com. Or you can email me, bryce@brycecollins.com, and my number is 085-215-2945.
Keep us up to date on how things are happening with the
Absolutely.
Tullamore Concert Choir. Bryce Collins, thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the English Market.